What up, Long Beach? Welcome back to the OG of Long Beach Sports Podcast. We've got a great interview for you this week as we continue to cover the LBC schools and sports teams. As always, I'm JJ Fiddler, and the other face on my computer screen right now is Mike Garabasio. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, man? I think you and I started working together when we were 19 in college, and it's been almost 20 years since then. I genuinely don't know the last time we went this long without doing something in person together. It's very weird.
It is very weird. Even in the summer, I mean, we're friends, so we're hanging out either way. It's been a long time.
We're not going to a post-track meet bonfire, you know, or anything like that at this point. What Up Long Beach is produced as part of our partnership with the Long Beach Post. We're doing a ton of other stuff for the Post as well, including the 562 Classic videos JJ has been producing, in addition to some education reporting and sports stories and other stuff. So definitely be sure to check out obpost.com as well as the 562.org.
Absolutely. Local journalism would be nothing without a strong local community. And I think Long Beach has shown how strong it can be over the last few weeks through all of this stuff, the closures and the ramifications thereof. You know, Mike, you've been doing a great job on that education reporting. And it's really crazy that we have to continue to timestamp. It is 12:30 on Wednesday, April 29th. So if you're listening to this and this information is old, you know why, because everything's changing so fast. But yeah, Governor Gavin Newsom, future president of the Western States of America, was talking about the fact that they might have kids back in the classroom in late July. So yeah,
everything's
changing all the time right now. So LB Post, 562, if you want your information locally and obviously throughout the state, that's where you're going to find it.
Just for the record, let me throw out there, that's not going to happen, the late July thing. And I don't know why he would say that out loud, but I've talked to several people in Long Beach and seen plenty of reporting from around the state. There's no logistical way that that will happen.
Still had to write an article about it, though.
Thanks, bud.
Well, listen, it wasn't the most difficult article that you wrote this week, my friend. I have got to tip the cap to you for getting a story that I think a lot of people need to hear, not just in Long Beach, but really around the world, a story of a family that's been really, really affected by the COVID-19.
I got a chance to write about the Alexander family. My wife and I have known them for a while. Stacy Alexander, this sort of mom in the family, is she's the vice principal at Cabrillo, but she's worked at other Long Beach schools. We've known her for quite some time. And her husband got the coronavirus and has been in the hospital for over a month. He got the virus from his mom, who passed away while he was sedated and on a ventilator. So he woke up to the news that he'd almost died, had recovered, and that his mom had not made it. And it definitely one of the hardest stories that I've had to write for a while. But I wrote it because of exactly what you just said. I think it's important. I did a feature last week on the Ely family and this week on the Alexander family, because I just see so many people who aren't taking this seriously. And I understand the vast majority of people are, but I just wanted to let these people tell their story of, you know, this is the absolute hell this wreaked on our household when one person got this virus. And, you know, Stacy said in the piece, she's like, I don't know what would have happened if I had gotten it, because our grandparent support system was on a ventilator. Her husband's on a ventilator. She's like, if I'd had to go to the hospital, I genuinely don't know what would have happened with my kids. You know, like someone, I'm going to have to hope that someone can take them in when they're worried that maybe the kids are carrying the virus or, and it's just really scary. I've got, my kids are a little bit younger than theirs, but we've run into them at concerts in the park and stuff. I mean, they're a great family. Stacy is one of our favorite people in the school district. And Lawrence has basically the same sense of humor that she does. I mean, they're both just hilarious people. And, it was really, I don't know, man. I was, you know, tearing up on the phone with both of them doing the interviews. But you just see how important it is that you're doing even the stuff that feels goofy, you know, washing your mask every time you come home, right? I mean, just every little thing you can do to make sure that you don't put your family through what they've had to go through, because it's just absolutely horrific. And I can't imagine, I know you can't imagine, I know no one listening to this can imagine, but, you know, your mom passes away and no one's able to be there with her, and you're in the hospital and no one's able to visit you. You're not able to get support. You know, and it might be another month before he's able to, you know, hug his kids and his wife. I mean, it's just a absolutely heartbreaking situation, but glad that he is at least on the road to recovery. So there's that sort of happy turn at the end. But yeah, man, take this stuff seriously, guys. We really are almost out of the hottest part of the fire, but we're not there yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It's working. It's working right now, so stay
inside.
We're
almost done. Hopefully 2-3 weeks, the most serious part of this is over, and then we can start figuring out the safest ways to kind of restart everything. But just give it 2 more weeks, man. You don't have to go to Newport this week.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, don't get itchy. This is track. You don't get this. If there's a false start, you're done. You have to leave the track. So just hang in there, folks. Make sure you check out that story at the562.org, along with all the coverage that we're doing, like I said, about the schools, the sports, and just the people of Long Beach and how they're getting through this tough time. We do that every day. So every day you get to the website, there's going to be some new information on there. This week on the podcast, we are going to be talking to the brothers Tiedemann, Ty and Ricky. Local sports fans may know them as the Poly quarterback and the Lakewood pitcher, but there's so much more to their story. I mean, Ty started his high school career at Lakewood before transferring to Poly, where he played both football and baseball. He was the quarterback in the famous Fog Bowl that we did for our recent 562 Classic video. He played for that Poly team that was at the top of the Moore League. And then he goes to LBCC, not a classic road, but he gets drafted in the 8th round of the 2016 draft by the Texas Rangers. And he's been in the minor league since then. He was even in the Dominican Winter League last year, Mike. So Ty has been all over the place.
And I just want to say, you know, a shout out, first of all, to Mama and Papa Tiedemann. I mean, one of my favorite families we've ever covered. Just all really grounded, funny, sweet people. And we've been really fortunate. Ty is going to be joined by his brother, Ricky, who's a San Diego State signee, should be playing in his senior season at Lakewood right now, but, you know, got injured and then the virus shut everything down. So didn't really get a chance to get going. Ricky has been rocketing up the MLB, projected draft boards, and was ranked as high as 91 in the most recent MLB.com list of top prospects in the country. Obviously looking like that's going to be the route he's going instead of college at this point. So very happy to be joined by Ty and Ricky Tiedemann.
Yeah, they're brothers stuck at home, though, so I'm hoping they're not beating each other up too much.
Oh, no, they're absolutely beating each other up for sure. Before we get to the interview, we have to give a quick shout-out to Naples Rib Company, our friends down on 2nd Street who've been sponsors of ours for over a decade. Continuing to sponsor us right now, I would add, even as they are in a challenging time for their business. And we are doing everything we can to make sure that Naples Rib Company and other small businesses and restaurants that have supported the community can make it through this, because it's going to be a tough road for them. Naples Rib Company is all about service, and they've continued to fulfill that. They actually donated some meals to Long Beach State last week, again, in a time when they're really going through something difficult for their business. So even more impressive than usual. I've been going every week. It's one of my favorite parts of every single week. So definitely get your online order in, Naples Rib Company. You can get it from the to-go window, so you don't even need to go inside of the restaurant. But delicious food, and it tastes like outside, which is obviously what we're all missing right now.
All right, here they are. We've got them, the brothers Tiedemann, Ty, and Ricky. Fellas, thank you so much for joining the show. I don't think we've ever done a four-man weave before. So for the listeners out there, Ty, can you say hello first, and Ricky, you say hello second?
Mm-hmm. Hey, guys, how's it going? It's Ty here.
Ricky here.
Yeah, it's for us, we can see the difference between you guys, because Ricky's got a lot more muscle than Ty does. But but for people listening at home, it, you know, it's a little bit tough for sure. So how you guys doing, man? What's life like at the house? How many people are in there with you? How bored are you? You know, how's everything going?
It's good. I mean,
pretty normal. Yeah. I mean,
it's not anything different than it would be for me really in the off season. Like, I've been doing the same stuff, and I mean, we keep each other pretty much entertained for the whole day, you know. So, I mean, it's not that crazy. You know, obviously we wish we can go out and do a lot more things. But, I mean, as long as we got a house full of, you know, brothers. So it's just, you know, constantly something going on.
Yeah. How many do you have in there right now? How many in the household?
So it's me, it's Ricky, Ricky's twin, and then Bo, and then my dad and my mom.
Okay. So full house. Yeah. You guys eating some big meals, family style?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. My dad was just joking about how they go to the grocery store. People think he's hoarding all the groceries. He's like, no, this is regular.
the workouts? What about the workout schedule? What are you guys doing together? Are you out there throwing the ball every day?
Pretty much every day, and then bullpenning once a week. So,
so we've actually gone to
ELB
and went on the biggest field they had and just had our catcher go 5 feet behind the plate, and then it simulates 60 feet. But, you know, we got to do it however we can.
Absolutely.
I like that. Everyone's got to do what they're supposed to do. You guys were both at interesting points in your baseball career, and I know it's difficult for us. I can only imagine how difficult it is for you guys. But, you know, Ty, you're supposed to be playing pro ball right now. Ricky, you're supposed to be – you know, the ace in the Moore League. I mean, this was supposed to be that senior season. Just on an emotional level, you know, Ricky first, how are you guys kind of handling that? You know, the disappointment of not getting to follow through with all the stuff you'd been dreaming about for this year.
I was kind of disappointed, but at the same time, it was a blessing because I had gotten hurt right before this quarantine happened. So this quarantine pretty much just shut everybody down just like me. So I'm all healed up already now. So it kind of helped me out more.
Yeah, and Ty, I mean, how about you? You mentioned that you're doing your off-season training program right now, but, you know, it's the end of April. Like, you obviously weren't planning on being home at the moment. So what's that been like for you just on a kind of an emotional level?
I mean, it's been crazy. I feel like me and as well as all, like, everybody in our house has been dealing with it pretty well. But for me, it's crazy because, like, what's the day, April 29th or something like that? I'm supposed to be literally at the field for 12 hours straight, and then – I sleep, wake up, eat, and go right back to the field. So, you know, like, it's weird to be at home and not be at the ballpark at almost 24 hours all the time.
Yeah, the with the draft coming up, Ty, do you remember your experience in the draft and kind of the emotions that you were going through?
Yeah, it was weird for me because, like, at the time I didn't know if I was going to be going as an outfielder or as a pitcher, and I didn't have a real gauge on, like, what teams were going to be more interested, what teams, what round, and kind of all that aspect of it. So it was very different for me. I went into it really open. Me and my dad were very new to the deal, so he was pretty much my agent. We were just like, you know what, whatever happens, happens, and we're going in with an open mind. So it's definitely different now being around the whole process for Ricky because, like, he's more set. Everybody knows him. Everybody's, like, kind of locked in on him. And so now it's just going to be interesting to see, like, how that plays out for him.
Ricky, what has that been like for you? You know, obviously a lot of questions will be answered 2 months from now. But, you know, right now, you know, last year you were good and you had a good season. But, you know, right. You were getting sort of those mid-major offers, right? So you ended up signing with San Diego State. And over the last 12 months, I mean, your draft stock is obviously just kind of skyrocketed. I think MLB.com has you looking like a, you know, top three round kind of a guy. What's that process been like for you, especially not being on the field and having, you know, scouts out looking at you? I imagine it's just been kind of a whirlwind for you.
Yeah, it's been exciting because the end of last year, I didn't have that much looks, and then I made a lot of adjustments in the summer, and then coming into this year, I felt really good. I felt like I was about to run the whole league, but of course, and then I got injured, but then quarantine helped me out, and then I'm all healed up. All the scouts have been talking to me, so we're just all keeping in touch. Nobody can really go to each other's house or anything, so.
You know, JJ and I have covered a number of guys who've gotten obviously very intense draft scrutiny, and you're not having the experience that any of them had, right? I mean, they would go to Blair Field, there'd be 25 scouts there. Then they would go to dinner, and there'd be 10 scouts sitting at other tables trying to hear what they were saying about college or whatever. You know, then they'd come home and they'd do 10 home visits. How are you managing that process of staying in touch with everyone? Are you just on the phone all the time? Are you doing video stuff? Or how are they able to kind of monitor you to the extent that they want to, I guess?
Before quarantine happened, I pretty much had in-home visits with most of the scouts for every team. So all of them pretty much knew me well. And then the ones I didn't have, we kind of just, like, Todd for – the Texas Rangers, we've been doing, like, FaceTime calls and stuff. Like, that's how all the scouts are talking to me now, so.
You're just on FaceTime 24 hours a day, basically. Yeah.
Zoom.
Ricky, obviously the growth spurt helped you recently, got you that extra little velo, but you've also been able to develop some pitches. Have you relied on your brother at all to try to develop those pitches and get some tips?
He's definitely helped me, but – I feel like we're two different pitchers because he's way different when it comes to, like, he's a righty, I'm a lefty. He throws sinkers. I don't even know how to throw a sinker. So. But last year I didn't really have a good changeup to rely on, but I worked on it in the summer, and that's probably my best pitch now. So,
how did you do that? I ask this of every pitcher who leaves one season and comes back with a changeup. How did you develop your change?
Last year I knew how to throw it. I knew how to hold it and everything, but I just didn't know where it was going to go. I can throw it. It would move a lot. I just didn't have any location, but just the more I practiced with it over the summer with my travel ball coach, and then I had a pitching trainer, and he helped me use my body a lot more just to control myself. So it kind of helped my location automatically. So,
Ty, you know, JJ mentioned it, or Ricky actually just mentioned, you guys are very different pitchers. You also couldn't really have had more of a different path from, baseball to the pros. We got to know you as, I think the first thing you said to me, you transferred from Lakewood to Poly when you were, a 10th grader?
Yeah, summer going into 11th
grade. Summer going into 11th grade. And you came into Poly as a quarterback. And I believe the first thing you said to me, I was talking to you at practice, and I was like, so, you know, there's been in the past kind of a rivalry between Lakewood and Poly. Is that going to be weird for you? And I think literally the first thing you said was, well, I'm not here to make any friends. I'm just here to become the starting quarterback and take over, right?
Yeah. The thing with me is, like, I'm very friendly with everybody, but, like, kind of when you get on the field, you got to have that mentality. You know, you got to have a switch. You got to flip. And when I'm there, new, and I'm already kind of like not as friendly with everybody, it's like, well, you know, I think I'm, you know, mentally tough enough to just grind it out. And if I'm not going to make much friends, but I still end up being the starting quarterback, then that's one thing. But, you know, I made a lot of friends there. You know, it wasn't like I went there and, you know, I was kind of like a punk or something like
right.
that. But, you know, so it was definitely like I had to have that mentality going in just in case things went south, you know, but I felt like I did a pretty good job, you know, kind of helping the team out as much as I could and winning that starting job.
Well, you won the starting job. You guys then win, the Division I championship. We've been doing these 5-6-2 classic videos that are sort of throwback looks at some of the biggest games we've covered. So we just did the Fog Bowl, against Bosco, which obviously you beat them. Then you go on and beat Modern Day. And then basically every year since then, those two teams have been in the CIF championship. Yeah. So. What do you remember about your time playing football? What do you miss about that compared to being a pro baseball player now?
You know, like, the big thing for me is I always kind of hold, like, you know, now it's like private schools, you know, they're running it right now. And for me, you know, I feel like being like one of the last major public schools to even like sniff a championship and get close to winning a state championship, you know, I'm always going to hold that, like, you know, deep within me, because it was such an amazing run. You guys were front row to every game to know, like, nobody would have thought that would have happened to start the season. So
I didn't think it was going to happen.
Yeah. Nobody would have thought that would happen. And it just makes it that much more like a sweeter moment. And the amount of talent we had on that team, the amount of, like, you know, guys that are just all over the map playing pro ball in different sports and stuff, you know, it's just like, you can't write that kind of script, you know.
Fog Bowl is one of the greatest football games I've ever seen played, and you obviously played a huge role in it. What's the number one memory, or like the first thing you think of from that night? Is there a repeating one?
For sure the beginning is when, because, like, you guys definitely didn't know me as well coming in to that season in general. And so, like, every time I see a video, like, my last name gets mispronounced three different ways.
Yeah, that's my bad.
JJ still can't say your last name. JJ still puts an L in Tiedemann.
That first ball on third and long, and, like, you guys mispronounce my name, that sticks with me right away, because I think it's just hilarious, you know? Like, it was such, like, a big drive, you know? And then, like, but then, obviously, the infamous, like, toe tap that I threw to Juju on the sideline, and then the long ball that, you know, everybody wants to, you know, scrutinize. But I commented on your guys' video. I told you, I remember it vividly. It was pass interference on Nigel, so we would have had the ball almost in the same spot anyway, so.
Absolutely. That's a quarterback's mind. That's a quarterback's mind right there.
Ricky, were you at that game?
Yeah, I was.
Could you see anything?
Where we were sitting, you couldn't really see at all, but I definitely remember Juju's catch for sure, because everybody went crazy at that. But yeah, I remember that night really, really clear. It was really fun game to watch. So
I'd say one more big memory from that too is that the one where they didn't blow the whistle when Gerard was supposed to be down, and that was my one and only tackle all year. So I'll take it. I had to tackle that guy, and then they kick a field goal. So I'm gonna take it how I can get it.
That's great. That's great film breakdown work right there.
Oh yeah.
So other than hanging out with the fam, eating a lot of food and working out, how else are you guys entertaining yourselves? Are you watching a lot of Netflix?
MLB The Show.
Yeah, I'm playing MLB The Show nonstop because I'm just itching to get back, you know. So I'm just making it feels like I'm, you know, I wake up and I'm like, all right, let me get on the game because I just, you know, I'm supposed to be at the field right now. But then other than that, we try and watch as many different, like, you know, video Netflix videos and stuff. Yeah. So, you know, we're just trying to keep busy. But like I told you, there's always something going on in here. It's really never really boring.
You're doing career mode on the show as yourself or what?
No. I made like a team and just has been like getting a bunch of different guys and playing people online. You know?
Which one of you guys is better? Who wins when you guys play?
Oh, video game wise, he isn't even nowhere near compared to me. I kill him in every video game there is.
I pretty much stopped playing video games because of him. So
he just watched now. I call him my assistant GM. He sits and watches me play all the time.
I help him out sometimes. But, yeah, he ended my career in Madden and everything. So.
Perfect.
That's a good big brother right there. I mean, I have my little brother's.
Made it not fun growing up.
So. Yeah, my little brother's 5 years younger than me, so he dealt with a lot of the same stuff for me for sure. Right. You know, one question I just had for the two of you guys is, I have to imagine you're both so happy for each other with the turns everything has taken. I know you guys are a sports family. And have been involved for a long time. What, you know, Ricky, what's it like for you watching Ty, you know, pick up baseball again his senior year of high school, and then 2 years later he gets drafted? And, you know, Ty, what's it like for you watching Ricky sort of take this skyrocket ride he's been on for the last year or so?
I definitely always been happy every time I think of him getting drafted and all that, and he pretty much paved the way for me right now. So I feel like without him, I wouldn't be where I'm at right now for sure.
Yeah, and for me, it's just like, you know, very satisfying because, like, everything I did, I knew that if I played my cards right and I did things the right way, it would just open up a lot of doors for him. And he wouldn't have to, you know, obviously I had to, you know, overcome a lot of, like, adversity. And it's not like I don't want him to overcome adversity, but, like, I want him to get there, you know, the best possible way, the fastest way he can, so he doesn't have to go that same football to baseball to JUCO to, you know, that kind of route, you know, where it takes longer and, you know, ultimately you're losing, you know, more money in that sense. You know, I want him to get the best possible draft spot and, you know, and just thrive that way.
So I've got to ask, I saw the Tiger King faux video that you guys made on social media. Ty dressed up as the Tiger King, let everybody know what the deal is. Why did you guys do that? Was it for love of the show?
Yeah, I had just finished watching the show with my girlfriend, Sammy, and we're laying down, we're about to go to bed, and I literally just wake up, I go, I have a perfect idea for a video tomorrow. And I don't even, like, explain it to her. I run out to the couch where Ricky's laying watching TV, and I tell him, I was like, I'm going to use a wig, I'm gonna shoot a mannequin, and we're going to make a video tomorrow. And we're just dying laughing, and I'm just laughing myself to sleep, thinking, like, I can't wait to just try this tomorrow. But honestly, I was just like, oh, this is going to be funny for me and, like, my really close friends. And then, I some more people kind of thought it was funny and kind of on point. So it was cool.
Yeah, just a few more people. Yeah, I think I shared quite a bit.
Ricky, last question for me. Do you guys give Ty crap for being a poly guy, since I know the entire rest of the family are all Lancers, at least to my knowledge?
No, I don't really, because I was going to go there. I was at poly for, like, maybe a week and a half. I wanted to go to poly, but the coach had gotten fired, and he was really good with Ty, so I was like, and my twin brother went to Lakewood at that same time, so it kind of made more sense for me to go to Lakewood instead.
Okay. I was about to say, every time I see your family, everything has always been red except for Ty for two seasons.
Yeah. And we play Lakewood, Pop Warner, and all that stuff, so it's been red, black, and white for the longest. And then, you know, just to be, because like I didn't play at all my sophomore year. I was on the sideline watching guys like Darius Powell, you know, play. And it's just like, who would have thought that I'm not around all these guys saying, you know, like Paulie's our enemy in a sense. And then I'm just like, I kind of want to go there.
Well, before we let you guys go, we got to do some fun questions for both of you. What's your pet peeve? What's the thing that bothers you the most that you just can't stand?
That's tough.
You guys are just so easygoing. Nothing bothers you?
I wouldn't say that. A pet peeve of mine, it's just going to be
on his shoes.
Yeah, he steps on my shoes all the time. Or when they want to wear my shoes when I'm not home and I see it on Snapchat.
Well, like when we go to dinner, we're all sitting at a table. We're all kind of tall, so it's like it's hard not to step on people's shoes.
But if I see a video and I'm like, dude, you're wearing my jacket, pants, and shoes when I'm on the road somewhere. So it's like, all right, he just wants to try and steal everything out of my closet because I can't take everything with me. So.
Well, you know, that's his job as a little brother, Ty. Like, you know, that's how it's supposed to happen. What's for both you guys, what's the first thing you can't wait to do after the quarantine's over?
Probably hit the beach.
Yes.
Yeah,
agreed.
That's a good one.
I mean, if quarantine ends while it's still baseball season, I mean, I'm excited to get back to it, you know, like I just want to see how it all plays out and if we could even have some sort of modified season this year, you know, I want to get back out there as quick as possible for sure.
I know a lot of brothers do this. Is there a movie that you guys quote with each other the most? Is there like a favorite family movie that you guys quote all the time?
I quoted on his Instagram post, just like because me and him know it was from the Zohan, the Adam Sandler movie, that little like raunchy movie. And me and him quote it all the time, and I just put it underneath this like picture, and we just laugh about it.
Underrated film. I agree. Absolutely.
All of his movies are underrated.
All right, well, one last one. This is a deep one. If you could absolutely know the truth to one question, like no matter what, you asked the question and you got the truth, what would that question be?
I have a good one. If I had to get the truth out of him, does he really think he's a better athlete than me?
How about you, Ricky? You got one?
I don't have one. I usually know everything. He tells me
everything. Ty's just an open book.
He's more straight up with me. He's like really blunt with me a lot. So
that's the way brothers should be, man.
Absolutely.
For sure. Guys, thank you so much for taking the time. We're obviously really excited for both of yours' future and the ability to be out there back on the diamond. We really look forward to seeing you guys out there. So really appreciate it.
Dude, Mike and JJ, thank you guys so much. I appreciate everything you guys do. Thanks for having us.
Take care, fellas.
All right, take it easy. Bye.
Another great interview from another great Long Beach family. I'm never surprised, though. You know what I mean? Like every time we're doing interviews for either stories or the podcast or whatever, we get done with it, the other person leaves, and you and I look at each other and we go, that was great.
Yeah, yes, for sure. And we're hopefully going to be able to. I will say that, you know, one thing, this has been a challenging time for us as sports writers because there's no sports. But it has definitely, you know, as we mentioned on the live chat we did with the Post last week, it's allowed us to be a little more creative in some things. I loved having the opportunity to do these 562 classic videos we've been getting going. And to be honest with you, as much as I love doing the podcast with you, I think these sort of 20-minute interviews with these different Long Beach people who we just never got it together to have someone call in. We never spent the money or figured out the technology. So we were always limited to who can meet us in the middle of the day, in the middle of the week. And it's for me, I think it's been really fun to get to have different voices and stuff on here.
Well, it's nice not to have to challenge their schedule as well. It's like,
yes,
hey,
everyone's sitting around.
Hey, guys, you got time to come on the podcast?
Right.
Always the answer is yes.
Yes, everyone's just sitting around, you know?
So before we get out of here, as we do every week on What Up Long Beach, giving you a recommendation that you can do while you're stuck inside, a quarantine recommendation, usually non-sports related, but we're going sports today because it's what everybody is talking about. It's the Last Dance documentary on ESPN. Mike and I have both been talking a lot about it together. He and I grew up watching that Bulls team. And now to look back on it and with all the information we're finding out, it's not only is it fun, it's also just an incredibly well put together documentary.
Yeah, I mean, if they stick the landing, I think it'll probably be second only to the OJ Made in America documentary, which I don't think any sports documentary is ever going to touch for me
personally, but it's already the most watched documentary ESPN's ever aired by several million people. And yeah, it's like if someone made a movie about the Beatles and somehow half of the information in it was new or something. I just can't wrap my head around how much new stuff they're unearthing about a team that was like kind of the birth of the modern media spectacle in pro sports. Like I thought every aspect of that team, like we knew about a lot of the drama and everything else, but I don't want to spoil anything. I do have a friend who has seen the next episodes, and I know that some of the stuff that's coming is, let's just say this. He said the first four parts were the weakest part of the 10-hour documentary.
That's how I felt while watching them. Absolutely.
And, they're great. You know what I mean? So
yeah, this is an old sports car. It takes a little time to get going, but the best stuff is yet to come for sure. I got to just say, Last Dance, great title. If somebody just says the name of the thing without it really being corny, it's great. That's perfect.
Tip of the cap to Phil Jackson, master of the narrative.
Amazing. I also said this to Professor Gary Metzger's class. Mike and I do like interviews and talking to high school and college students around the city. Obviously, we weren't able to do that this month. So we went on Zoom with Gary Metzger's class and we were talking about it. And I was telling the kids that take note from this documentary as a young writer. Like the best stories aren't told in order. The ability to go from Jordan as the most famous person in Paris, and then you actually see them move on the timeline to Jordan as an unknown guy trying to break in at North Carolina. It's just, it's really, really interesting and well told because it's not in order. And I think that's a huge deal. It has to have juxtaposition in it, you know?
I'm very jealous of, as a writer, I'm very jealous of the visual cue of the timeline moving back. And every time it happens, I'm thinking to myself, God, I wish I could do that when I'm writing a feature. You know, I mean, you can do it with words, but I just think visually watching that thing move back, it makes it so seamless. Like you don't feel like you're being bounced around at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We also talked about this on the LB Fee Show. Every other week, we talked to Long Beach State Athletics Director Andy Fee about what's going on at the beach. And we were talking about Last Dance, and you mentioned the celebrity culture that Bulls team in the 90s kind of created. And I think one of the first things I noticed was how different the crowd looked in the 80s compared to the way the crowds looked in the 90s. Mostly the color. There's no jerseys in the 80s crowd. You look at those Bulls crowds from when Jordan's a rookie, like you don't see any jerseys in the stands. And then when they show you those 90s games, jerseys everywhere. It's that celeb culture that kind of changed the sport. And I mean, they mentioned it when they were talking about Scottie Pippen and his contract. Like he just signed a contract 2 years too early because the revenue coming into the NBA just skyrocketed because of jersey sales.
Right.
And as I said on the other pod, I guess that's another thing you can give Michael Jordan credit for. It's a lengthy list.
I mean, I just don't think there's any way for kids now or for the Tiedemann brothers to, or anyone who's in high school to understand how different the world was prior to that. And I mean, Michael Jordan was drafted basically like when we were born. So you and I don't have a clear memory of pro sports before Michael Jordan, but I do know that he was very different from nowadays there's people who are nuts about Messi. There's people who are nuts about LeBron or KD or James Harden. There's people who are nuts about Tom Brady. Like that really did not exist except for Michael Jordan at that time, to the extent that at Minnegant Elementary School, everyone was a Lakers fan and a Michael Jordan fan. I mean, you know what I mean? That was really the first time that it happened, which now there's more fans of individuals almost, it feels like, than there are fans of teams, you know? But at that time, as you mentioned, it was just like the working class version of the opera. If you lived in Chicago, you were coming home from work, I'm going to pop into the Bulls game for a little bit and watch some basketball. But it was because they were in Chicago, right? And maybe they're good, maybe they're not good. And Michael Jordan really changed all that and kind of opened the door a crack, I feel like, to the way everything is now.
Yeah, the game's completely different. Watching Dennis Rodman play defense is like, what is that? Is that murder ball? Because that's not basketball. You also mentioned the Lakers. I got to tell you, I pulled back the curtain a little bit. I think I've told you this story. The first time I ever cried because of sports was the night that Michael Jordan beat my Los Angeles Lakers, because I obviously loved MJ,
right. But
I was a Lakers fan, so I was so torn. I was so torn, Mike. My little heart couldn't stand it. And I remember my dad like patting my head and being like, "Don't worry, buddy. Lakers will get another one." I had to wait a while.
no one feels bad for us as Lakers fans, but yes. I would say, you know, shout out to the Clippers were the only reason I got to see Michael Jordan in person, right? And I feel like you, and it was Michael Jordan, obviously Scottie Pippen, and Charles Barkley, and Patrick Ewing. A lot of the greats, a lot of the all-time greats, it was like, hey, man, you go to Ralph's and you spend $10 on groceries, they'll give you a voucher for a Clippers ticket or, you know, a coupon, $6 for a Clippers ticket. So I got to see a lot of the all-time greats growing up here, even though I hadn't gone to a Lakers game until I was, like, I think in high school just because we couldn't afford it. You know what right. I mean?
Yeah, not a lot of people can't.
Yeah, for sure. Right, I mean, I I'm right back to not being able to afford it today.
Yeah, them showing the Bulls playing the Clippers in that I think it was his second season, showing the LA Sports Arena. I got all excited. I was like, "Oh, LA Sports Arena!" And then they show it, and I'm like, "Oh, wait, that looks like every other arena they're showing in this documentary. The only difference is the LA Sports Arena never changed."
Right. The LA Sports Arena went to its grave looking exactly as it did in 1986, for sure.
Well, let's get out of here. We're working on some more stories that you can find right now at the562.org and Long Beach Post. So thank you to everybody at both websites for making all of this stuff happen. Obviously, we will be back next week with another episode of What Up Long Beach and another good interview from another great Long Beach personality. So for Mike and for JJ and for everybody else I just mentioned, thank you for listening, Long Beach. We will talk to you again, and we will see you very soon.